Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening again, everyone. My name is Jim Burns. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Right now, you're in the Bullyproof Classroom. The number to call in, 646-595-4965. Again, that number, 646-595-4965. I welcome your calls. The last show that we did was on a topic that I called Everybody Knows. And you can read this article on my website at www.bullyproofclassroom.com. It's there. It's a second or third article now. We had no listeners last week, live listeners anyway, but we did have over 1,200 archived listeners. So there is an interest in this topic that we're talking about and that we're going to continue. I'm going to just recap a little bit as we move forward and go over some of the things that everybody knows. I got about halfway through, and tonight it shouldn't take me that long to get through the balance of these things. I just posted a video on YouTube. It's the top 25 anti-bullying tips for teachers and victims of bullying. If you have a chance, go see it. I think you'll enjoy it. It's something that everybody should know and everybody should act on when they do take a look at the video. It shares some really good tips that teachers and victims of bullying can use. So if you're having trouble in that area, as many people are today, I think it's important that you take a look at that. Just rehashing a little bit from last week and going over the first few things that we spoke about in terms of what everybody knows. The first thing that we spoke of was that disrespect is pervasive in society. And it is. There's no question about it. And I am very black and white. I am kind of all or nothing. I am kind of consistent in how I deal with people and things and how I respect people and how I respect their views and their thoughts. And it doesn't mean I have to like it. It just means that I'll respect it. And I expect to be respected for my thoughts as well. And I think what happens is that often when someone has a view or a thought that's different than ours, we start to become confrontational because of the fact that they think differently. This is a problem that sits with adults as well as with kids. And we don't leave enough space in any conversation for disagreement. And that's something that we have to begin to take a look at. So disrespect is pervasive in society. People aren't always going to agree with us. And I used to tell parents when they came into my office all the time, I don't expect you to agree with me, but I do expect you to cooperate. And usually that helped. But realistically, disrespect is there. It's something that we don't give enough thought to it. Second thing that everybody knows is that no one has self-control. Kids don't have it, and a lot of adults don't have it. We have homes in foreclosure. Everybody wants something bigger and better. We have a problem with childhood and teenage obesity, sugar diabetes, many things that exhibit the lack of self-control. spending. Our government, for example, bailed everybody out because the banks didn't have self-control, only because the buyers didn't have self-control when they bought their house. Everybody knows it. And the only thing that's going to produce a nation of people with self-control is consequences. And unfortunately, many people are sitting in that leaking boat right now and are experiencing those consequences of a lack of self-control. Everybody knows that we've medicalized education. There was just an article that was written that the Center for Disease Control is concerned about the number of kids that have been classified with attention deficit disorder. And the amount of money that's spent on medication during the last few years is in excess of $9 billion. And by medication, I mean medication like Adderall, Ritalin, and other medications that are used to help kids with attention deficit disorder. And again, I'll say it, don't get me wrong, medication, if it helps, by all means. If you think it's going to help your son or daughter, I'm not a doctor, please go take it. Or don't take it. It's your decision. The bottom line is, as any therapist will tell you, medication along with therapy nets the best result. And I think medication along with effective discipline will net a good result when we work with kids in school. Part of the problem is we rely too heavily on the medication to try and control the kid and not imposing effective consequences. The next thing that everybody knows is the statement that I like you, but I don't like your behavior is not true. Kids in school today have behavior that would curl your hair, and they become very difficult to like. And we have to begin to use some good judgment when we deal with these kids, because our attitude and our posture and how we speak to those kids will communicate to them that we don't like them. And kids will always pick up on that. And I know that many times, even when I was a teacher, I would go home and I would just pray that certain kids would take the next day off because they had driven me crazy. And when they did show up, how I addressed them, how I looked at them, and my posture when I spoke with them just absolutely communicated that I didn't like them. And kids know it. So I like you, but don't like your behavior. Do yourself a favor. Try to determine the kid that gives you the most trouble and just take a good look at how you talk to them, treat them, and how you act toward them versus how you treat and act toward the kid or the nicest kid in your class or the one that you like the most. And you'll see that there's a marked difference in your behavior. Everybody knows that one of the things that we wanted from a kid years ago was for him to obey. Now it's the last thing that we get. And obedience has become a word that people don't want to use. I guess it's too conservative. I don't know. I mean, I had to stop using it myself because teachers were complaining that it was likened to dog training. My point is, okay, I'll use compliance. It means the same thing, to do what you're told when you're told to do it with a good attitude. That's what we want. Wouldn't it be nice to say to a kid, sit down, and he sat down, instead of asking and getting to the point where you're almost begging him to listen to you? Everybody knows that we lie to kids. We lie to them. We don't tell them the truth. Sometimes we give them a false sense of their academic ability, and they believe that they're doing far better than what they actually are doing. By the way, there was a article that was there was a school district in New Hampshire. The Windham School District has just barred dodgeball from gym classes because they claim that it's violent and it's exclusionary. Violent and exclusionary. Which I'm not buying at all. It's a game. And when it's supervised and played correctly, it's a great game. The point is, you have a lot of sports that could be considered violent in society. You have football, Let's take away the whole football program, lacrosse, field hockey, and even soccer at times can be considered violent when you consider the body contact that's involved. Exclusionary, as a matter of information, there are winners and there are losers. Kids lose at a game. Kids lose at a sport. Kids lose in many different ways today. But the biggest loss that they will have is when someone gives them a clear view of their academic ability and someone tells them that they're not invited to a party or whatever the case may be because another person just chose not to. Kids will be excluded. Kids are going to lose. Okay, adults lose. And if it was a case of win-win all the way around, we wouldn't need the Super Bowl, we wouldn't need the World Series, and we certainly wouldn't need political elections. For tonight, one of the things that everybody knows, and I may have covered this last week, but I'm going to cover it again, is that excuses are built around circumstance, and which could be environmental or genetic. Crimes get committed all the time, and circumstances always brought up. Person may have had a tough upbringing or he was raised on the wrong side of the tracks, and somehow, some way, we've gotten to a point in this society and in our culture, and we have this idea of determinism. Determinism. And that's who we are. We can't change. We're determined by our genetics. We are influenced by our genetics. We're not determined. Our environment will influence us. It won't determine us. Because in reality, everybody has a choice that they can make in terms of their own behavior. And if we make poor choices, that's what it was. It was a poor choice. And I do believe that if we provide enough excuses for anyone, they'll provide you with the evidence to support your belief. That's the self-fulfilling prophecy. I give you enough reasons not to do something based on your ability, you won't do it. And teachers have been forced to excuse behavior by a dysfunctional system. And that system has been shoehorned into education by this dysfunctional society. Every single time a crime gets committed, and I'll go back to the Christian Pittman case probably 10 years ago. 15-year-old boy, he was 13 at the time, is dating a young gal. He's living in North Carolina with his grandparents in a trailer. And his grandparents disapproved of him dating this gal. He gets so outraged that when they're taking their afternoon nap, he goes into the trailer with a shotgun, shoots them dead, takes the dog, puts it on a leash, puts the dog in a pickup truck, but before he decides to take off, he burns the trailer down. 13 years old. The defense attorney at the time said that the reason he did what he did was because of an adverse reaction that he may have had to Zoloft. The prosecuting attorney said, Zoloft's not on trial here, this kid is. And when he was 15 years old, he stood trial for murdering his grandparents. They tried to use circumstance as an excuse for his behavior. Now, do I want to see a 15-year-old kid go to jail? I don't think so. I really would not. I don't think it's going to do him that much good, because they tried him as an adult. But I was concerned about the verdict, and I didn't want him to get off behind some type of medical issue or circumstance that he was involved with. Bottom line, he was found guilty. He's doing 30 years. They didn't allow the circumstance to enter in. And I agree. I wish they could just find a better place to put the kid rather than jail. Now, whether he was in a juvenile facility or whether he was in doing hard time with some hard criminals, I don't know. The bottom line was, he did it. The choice was his, and he did it. My name is Jim Burns. Right now you're in the Bullyproof Classroom. The number to call in, 646-595-4965. If you're listening, thank you. If you're not listening and you happen to run across this, archive it and download it for yourself and take a good listen about some of the stuff that everybody knows but doesn't want to talk about and in most cases won't do anything about. The next one, the next thing that everybody knows, parents need parenting. And I'm just going to go back to my own childhood, as I do very often, because I think I learned a lot from my childhood. I had a pretty good dad and a pretty good mom, and they made their mistakes. And, of course, the old line that everybody has from my generation, I'm a baby boomer, I'm 58 years old, and we all had this great line, which was, our parents did the best they could with what they knew. And that's true. They did the very best they could with the information that they had. And they raised us. And they brought us onto this earth, me and my two sisters. And in reality, they didn't have a clue as to what they were doing. And many adults were raised by parents who didn't know what they were doing. My dad, when his mother died, he was my age. He was 58 years old. And it was almost as if he lost some type of check valve or some type of person that was really holding him accountable. And he ended up occasionally going off on benders, and he made an attempt to try and get away with a little bit more than he had before his mom died. He needed parenting, and he didn't even know it. And I think as adults, our job should be to work on developing a real solid relationship with our own parents, because it's going to help us with our own children. Your parents, you know, weren't perfect, and I'm a parent, and I'm not perfect. I still probably need parenting. I had some great guys that came into my life that helped me as I had my own children. My mom, when her mother died, her wheels fell off. And her behavior changed. She needed parenting. And what do you do? What do you do, okay, with a person when they're angry at their own parents? What do you do with them? See, the older your parents get, the more you should work to develop a stronger relationship with them. Because I'm going to tell you that the guilt that's associated from a strained relationship with your parents, when they die, is only going to affect one person, and that's you. It's not going to affect them, because they're going to be in the ground. Or they're going to be scattered, their ashes will be scattered across an ocean or somewhere that they wanted it to be scattered, or they'll be in an urn sitting in your house. The only person a bad relationship with your parents affects is you. And as they grow older, you need to take, and I need to take, or I don't even have the chance anymore because both my parents are dead, but thank God my relationship with both of them was very good when they did pass away. I talk to hundreds, if not thousands, of parents in my office when I worked as a principal, and I used to get into conversations with them about their own parents, and they would say to me, well, I don't talk to my parents. And I figured maybe they had a little spat or something like that. And I would say to them, how long haven't you spoken to your parents? And sometimes they would tell me, 10 years. 10 years you haven't spoken to your parents. What could have possibly have happened that you don't talk to your parents for 10 years? It's only going to affect the way you raise your own children, because you are going to become angry. You're going to have a sense of bitterness, and you are absolutely going to take that out on your own kids. And you won't know how to discipline your own kids. See, we have a built-in human resource that we can go to if we want to, and if we took the time to even think about it. Our parents have a great deal of wisdom. And a good friend of mine once said to me, even bad parents do some things right. And that's what we have to be aware of. Now, sometimes parents can do some pretty bad things. And I mean bad stuff. And sometimes it's just that hard. It's that hard to develop or redevelop or to have a relationship with them. Because I do know that people can forgive, but they never forget. And because we don't forget, we carry it around with us. And you have to find a place to put it, because if you don't, what'll happen is it'll eat away at you. It's not going to eat away at them, because parents who have never taken a look at themselves truly, okay, they don't think that they did anything wrong. So that's our job now. See what you can do with the relationship that you have with your parents. Because if you're a parent, you need parenting. And they needed parenting as well, your own parents. The bottom line is they never went and got it. You take the steps, try and figure out what you need to do in order to be a better parent to your own children. Everybody knows that kids don't fear anything today. They really don't. And it's one of these things that we've just lost track of it. We can't even understand it. See, kids, when they're little, they have a healthy fear of their parents, a healthy fear of their parents. And if the parent is disciplining in anger, and maybe we can go back to the previous, everybody knows that parents need parenting. A child will remember what happened to him. The social and emotional window to the brain closes around the age of 5. When that happens, whatever conclusions that child has, he's drawn by the age of 5. And kids will go through something around the age of 10 that's called mental puberty. And mental puberty is when about 3% of their brain thinks like an adult. And that's when they lose their fear of disagreeing with their parents or having an argument with their parents. And that's when they really start to lose their fear. And if the child wasn't given a fair shake, they remember it. If they felt that mom or dad was unfair, disciplined in anger, and really didn't see life from their perspective at all, what will start to happen is you'll have a kid start to lose his fear of his parents as well as other adults. And truthfully, folks, that's one of the biggest reasons why we have such behavior problems today. True, kids don't fear anything, but that time period between birth and 5 years old is so important. It is so critical to develop a healthy relationship with that child, because they remember. They remember what you did to them. Somewhere deep in that kid's soul and in that kid's heart is the remembrance of being unfairly treated. And there's a lot of things you can do to redevelop a relationship with your kid. And, you know, even little kids. I ask parents sometimes, do you ever play with your kids? Do you ever play with them? Do you ever do anything with them? Play board games or, I mean, to play, you know, anything. Any game at all. Roll a ball on the floor. You know, be happy to see them. Wrap your arms around them. You know, anything that they want to play, do you play it? Or do you let them do things with you? Most times we don't want kids to do things with us because we want to get it done. And it's too much work to teach them how to do certain things. And kids want to spend time with us. You see, what happens is they want to spend time with us when they're young. They want to play with us. They want to help us. I mean, I remember my oldest daughter when she was 3 or 4 years old. I was painting a room. All she wanted to do was paint with me. And truthfully, you know, I didn't allow her to do it. Try to get paint on the floor or all kinds of other stuff. Well, how hard would it have been for me to give her a hunk of wood and a paintbrush and thrown down a piece of plastic and let her paint that piece of wood? How hard would it have been? We have to involve ourselves with our kids if we are going to instill in them, not necessarily the fear, but the respect that we want them to have for us as adults. And in schools today, the systemic discipline that gets used is really a slap on the wrist. It doesn't work. Because if the parent gets to a point where they fear their own kid, the kid will come home, bully the parent, and tell the parent to go into school because I wasn't wrong, somebody else was wrong, and they're picking on me. Now the parent's afraid of their own kid. And we have to be aware of that. See, there's sometimes bad news we have to give even a 3-year-old. And we're going to have to learn how to deal with tantrums. We're going to have to learn how to deal with them talking back to us. We're going to have to correct them for disrespect. We're going to have to correct them for irresponsibility. Because if we don't, all you are doing is promoting an adult, promoting that behavior that when that child becomes an adult, may not want to do chores, may not want to work, may have an entitlement mentality. Who knows what they will have, but the bottom line is it comes from the seeds that were planted when they were much younger. the last thing that everybody knows, the very last thing, and this is a big one, that kids have lost their ability to get along, and they are rapidly becoming adults who have matured physically but not mentally or emotionally. And you probably know some adults like this. They are immature. Immature. They look like adults. They walk like an adult. But the bottom line is, they may not be able to hold a job. They may not be able to maintain a relationship with anyone. They may have what I call grandiose thoughts about life. And by that I mean they're always looking for the easy way out. Somebody once said to me, you know, if you want to be a millionaire, the way you do it is you work 20 years and you have a salary of $50,000 and you will have made $1 million. Now, of course, you wouldn't have saved all of that money. But the bottom line is, okay, people who don't have money saved and don't handle money wisely, they are adults who have matured physically but not emotionally. And the problem comes in, okay, when they're broke and they want to try and make a million at some project or at some type of endeavor or investment or whatever the case may be. We have been taught in this society to disagree, but with the wrong attitude. Kids have been taught to disagree, but with the wrong attitude. So don't disagree with me, or I'm not going to like you. And I probably have said this already, but the bottom line is, a disagreement doesn't mean that you and I have to be enemies. All it means is we don't see eye to eye on certain subjects. It is impossible. It is impossible for someone to grow physically and to not get along in this world. You have to get along in the world. I used to tell my students all the time, there's three things, and I'm talking about my college students, there's three behaviors that we have to develop in a child. We have to teach kids how to be respectful, how to be responsible, and how to be compliant. Three things. Why were there only three things? Because, number one, respect deals with people. And there's something like 10 billion people on this planet. So the chances are real good you're going to be around people your entire life. So you better learn how to get along. Number two, responsibility. We all have to work. We all have to hold a job. We all have to make money. We all have to support ourselves. We all have to do the necessary things for survival. So we have to be responsible. If we speed, we get a ticket. And the other thing is we all have to be compliant. And I shared this in the last show. Compliance just means you do what you're told when you're told to do it. Read the sign coming off of the New Jersey Turnpike. It says you've left the New Jersey Turnpike. Obey local speed laws. The idea that a productive conflict could exist and two parties involved could leave enough space between them for a disagreement can be too tough for some people to imagine. Because we've got such big, fat egos, and we don't want anyone to disagree with us. And because that means you're an idiot, and I'm the one that's right. And I go back to a story I told maybe in the a while ago where I had a young fellow who was 19 years old one time, and I was talking to him about the construction of Citi Field, which is where the Mets play, and I said that the owner of the Mets, the Wilpon, spent all their money on that field, building that new stadium. And he looked at me and he went, "No," with this face like, "What are you talking about, you jerk?" I was like, "Wait a minute. Okay. It's okay, man. Okay. You don't see it that way. Well, how do you see it?" I mean, I wanted to get some information out of him. But all he knew was I was wrong and I was an idiot for making that statement. Win-win doesn't really exist. And it can't happen because somebody always has to win and so somebody always has to lose. But compromise does. Compromise does exist. Doesn't mean I lost. It just means that I'm willing to see life from another person's perspective. Even in schools, teachers are taught not to talk too loud because someone may disagree with them. Information may get back to the principal. And once the information gets back to the principal, he'll put a muzzle on you and make sure that you can't say things about him or about the school or about her and about the school. And all anyone was doing was just disagreeing. But see, when we disagree with the right attitude, we can disagree because what we offer is constructive suggestion. A disagreement doesn't have to turn into a fight, and that's what we have today. We have a bunch of adults who are fighting kids, and we have kids who don't know how to disagree with the right attitude. That line of political correctness that we all have to walk. I don't agree with everybody. I don't agree with everything. And I'll speak my mind, but I'll let you speak yours. We all don't have to be politically correct. Everybody knows that at some point in our life, we were a victim of a bully. Everybody knows. Somewhere in our upbringing, we had a problem with somebody that sits with us to this day, that bothers us to this day. My person was Tommy. He was the biggest brute I ever dealt with, and he was 3 or 4 years older than me, and he was 3 or 4 years older than a lot of kids. And he did nothing but pick and punch and fight and throw you down on the ground and just was brutal. And don't think that I don't remember it. And there are people that have had that happen to them as well. I used to tell that story, and when I told it, people in the audience would come up to me and say, "I had so-and-so. I had another kid that used to call me names all the time. I had one kid that used to steal my lunch, take my basketball," all kinds of different things. People walk with that, and they walk with it for a lifetime. And we still have a fear of man. And sometimes the man that we have the most fear of is the man with the most power. And power often determines how big that fear is going to be. Bullying, folks, is an intergenerational problem. And all we want it to do is go away. But it's not going to. It's not going to. And there's a big reason why it won't. Because there's about 20% of the kids who bully right now in our schools. About 20%. It's the 80-20 principle. It always was and it always will be. We spend 80% of our time dealing with 20% of the kids. And those, and you know, and we have these, this 20%. We have this 20% in our schools today. And believe me, I am not that concerned about the 20% of the kids who bully right now. Because we're talking about kids from kindergarten through the 12th grade. We want it to stop. We want it to end, but it's not going to. I'm more concerned about the 20% of those kids that bully in our schools and our communities right now. More concerned about what they become as adults. Did you ever think of that? That a bully is a bully in school, and he picks on kids and wreaks havoc and says mean things and so on and so forth to other people. If he's not corrected, what is he going to become as an adult? Who will he wreak havoc on as an adult at a much higher level? And create much greater problems, either within the workforce, and I can't tell you the number right now, but it's something like $90 million, or I think it's even $1 billion, have been spent in the last, I think it's 10 years, dealing with workplace bullying, where people have to take time off. The harassment suits and everything that goes on is all a result of an adult that was never corrected as a child for his behavior. And believe it or not, those adults get married, get into relationships, they absolutely can wreak havoc in a family, and when they do, the model that their children get is that the way I get what I want is through fear and intimidation. And then you have another bully that's produced. Bullies can produce bullies. On another note, which is a whole other show, victims can produce bullies as well. We absolutely have to learn how to get along so much better within our culture, within our society. Because if we don't, what will absolutely start to happen is what a parent does in moderation, the children will do in excess. Yeah, bullying went on 40 years ago. Was it as pronounced and in the news as much as it is now? No. Strictly because of the fact that it's gotten worse, so much worse. And adults don't know how to manage it. Kids don't know how to manage it. Schools don't know how to manage it. Society's losing control. And we have to put ourselves in a position to do just a few things, like disagreeing with the right attitude. We're cooperating even though we disagree. I love people. I love our society. I love where I live. I love what I do. And I just want to see us get into a position someday where we all will get along. And I know that's Pollyanna, but the bottom line is it would be a great world if we could. My name is Jim Burns. You've been listening to Blog Talk Radio. You have been in the Bullyproof Classroom. We just covered Everybody Knows. Next show is going to be on 25 anti-bullying tips that can be used for teachers and for victims. Another great show that's going to be coming up is a show called Playground Politics. Find out what kids learn about bullying on the playground and why we have to let them handle some of these problems on their own, because if we don't, they're going to end up having a whole lot of trouble moving forward. It's been great being with you. Okay, you all have a great night. Thank you.